Chico Smoke Shop. Save up to 40% on all products with no city or state sales tax. Over 100 brands, including a walk-in humidor. Visit Chico's inside or take advantage of the drive-thru. Open 7 days a week. You'll save up to 40% every day at Chico Smoke Shop.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. As always, I'm Justin Spears here with Bruce Basco and Dominic Bachaco. We are live at Frogenfurken on a Wednesday before Arizona's matchup with the Washington Huskies. And just for a little heads up for all the folks here at Frogenfurken, before every Arizona Wildcats basketball home game, myself, Bruce Basco, Dominic Bachaco, and the Wildcaster team, we come out here to Frogenfurken and do a live podcast. And it's the spring semester, folks. What was the last time we did a podcast? Was it was just entering 2019. Pac-12 play was just getting started,
I think it was the first week of Pac-12 play, right?
Yeah.
Or first week of January.
It was like a long time ago.
And a lot has happened between that then and now. But it's the start of the spring semester, so there are a lot more students walking around. Foot traffic down on university is more active. But you bring up a good point, Bruce. A lot has happened between the start of Pac-12 play and now. And I remember talking about this is, you know, they played Cal, they played the Bay Area schools, they played Colorado and Utah at home. And everything was all hunky-dory for the Wildcats then because they were one of the teams at the top of the Pac-12. And we said, okay, that's great, but we're going to tell, or these Arizona Wildcats are going to tell a lot about themselves over the next few weeks, going on the road to L.A., playing at ASU, playing against the Oregon schools at home, which they split, losing to the Ducks on that Thursday night game. But Bruce and Dom, for you guys, watching this Arizona Wildcats basketball team, what have you noticed about the Wildcats and kind of their decline? Bruce, we'll start with you.
Well, I think it was two things. Yeah, like you said, the schedule turned, and then they got key guys hurt, and that's really what happened. I mean, I don't think there's you know, and I think maybe collectively there's a little bit of confidence been dragging with this team, especially in L.A. We noticed that. I mean, they were getting, you know, towards the basket, decent shots, and just couldn't hit anything. And then, at ASU the other night, they actually played pretty well, but that's a really good team, and they were without Brandon Williams in that game, and they had Dylan Smith foul out, and if either of those things don't happen, maybe they win that game. Mm-hmm.
And you said it, Justin, you have the Cals and the Stanfords and Colorado, Utah. Those are four teams.
The Lows.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, those are four teams Arizona should beat. And once the schedule turned, and really running up to this Washington game, I mean, it was to test how good they were, or how good they were going to be this year. And it hasn't been good for the Wildcats. Mm-hmm.
What about personnel changes? Because last time we were at Frogenfurken, the Wildcats still had Emmanuel Acott on the team, and he then decided to transfer, which was kind of a weird thing. You don't normally hear starting players transfer out of a program mid-season. And then Chase Jeter had the back injury that he suffered against Oregon State. He missed the L.A. trip, in which the Wildcats desperately needed him during that span. And then Brandon Williams has this lingering knee issue that he's been dealing with ever since he was a junior in high school. So a lot of things have changed. Brandon Williams, he's going to be out this week against Washington and Wazoo. But Dom, with all the personnel changes, Chase Jeter going down, Arizona missed him on the glass. Against ASU, Brandon Williams was out. Remy Martin goes off for a career high. They could have used him defensively on a guy like Remy Martin. So a lot of these games that Arizona is losing, you look at him and say, well, I mean, they were already slim to begin with, and now they're even thinner.
I mean, you look at personnel change, you can go as far back as Omar Tielemans if you want. I mean, there's another big body they could use inside, right? I mean, Stone Gettings just got here. How they'd love to have him right now. I mean, they're just so thin inside, and when Acott left, that was a big blow. I know a lot of people at the time, he wasn't doing a lot. He wasn't giving them a lot of production in the starting five. But he was a body, and he was a guy inside that they could use now. Chase Jeter goes down, and you know their depth is gone. I mean, they don't have anyone on the inside. I mean, you're starting Dylan Smith at the four, and now without Brandon Williams, they're even thinner. You know, on both sides of the court, and someone's got to step up, and it hasn't happened yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that they are what they are, and that's what they were expected to be. But going back to the beginning of the year, once again, I mean, they were kind of looked at like a mid-level Pac-12 team, and I think part of the reason for that is just they were so thin up front, and now we're seeing what happens.
That's a very good way of putting it. They are, you know, they are what they
no,
are.
I'm thinking of Dennis Green right now. They are what we thought they were.
I mean, you're right. I keep going back to the Pac-12 poll, okay? I picked them sixth. Miller, they were picked fourth officially. Even Sean Miller said, that may be a little too high. I think he said something like, I'm surprised we were that high. And he doesn't usually, you know, he usually does. He's usually pretty honest about his assessment of whatever the poll says. When they pick the one, he says, hey, we deserve it or whatever. He doesn't shy away from it. And this time he thinks, whoa, we're fourth? I mean, he just replaced his entire starting lineup and had six guys in April and had to go scrape to get some guys, and some of which apparently didn't work out, or one of which.
That's, you know, again, a very good way of putting it, because nobody really expects this team, especially not now, to win the conference, obviously, or even compete to win the conference. And I should slap myself on the back of the wrist, because at the beginning of the year, Bruce, I know you had them sixth. I thought they'd win. I thought Sean Miller would be coach of the year. And not, again, I've said this all year, not that's not a testament to Arizona. That's a testament to how bad the Pac-12 is. But, hey, they're in fifth place right now. The objective through this losing streak has kind of been, how can they make the tournament? And it's getting further and further away. I mean, it's getting to the point where if they didn't have to win it before, they definitely have to win the Pac-12 now, I think.
Yeah.
To even have a chance, or, you know, at the absolute least, make a run in Vegas to the Pac-12 championship. Yeah. I mean, Bruce, do you see that going any differently? With how this team's playing right now, I mean, they need a lot to happen to turn things around.
I mean, for some reason, their ratings are actually pretty respectable still. They're just outside of the bubble on a lot of those, the Ned and the Sagarin and Kenpom. So you'd think, by judging by that, if they could beat Washington, which is really their only quadrant one opportunity left, then they, you know, and don't stumble too much, you know, and, you know, win most of their game, you know, almost all the games the rest of the way, they could probably, you know, as long as they got to Friday and the Pac-12 tournament, maybe they still get an at-large. But I think Miller's probably right in that he's seen that this team's got some more losses coming up, and they need to focus on winning that tournament.
You talk about quadrant one wins, and I think this is important. This is an important game for Arizona, because isn't Washington pretty much on the teams on the outside looking in terms of being in the top 25, because they're 9-0 in conference play. They've won the last, was it 11 games? Like, they won 11 straight games. I mean, they're on a roll right now. I think Washington is a pretty solid team. If Arizona were to win against Washington this week, does this make a better case for them to be an NCAA tournament team? I know on the surface it's going to look like it, but is this kind of a thing where Arizona can look back and say, okay, well, we've had some key wins, Washington being one of them?
To me, it would be a turning point, maybe, if they keep capitalizing on it. It would be a turning point more than anything, because, again, at this point, I know they're respectable in some ratings, but at the end of the day, I don't think they're a tournament team right now, and I don't think, you know, one win over Washington and at the beginning of February is going to make them a tournament team. Literally. But, you know, again, it can be a turning point. The schedule lightens up a little bit, and, you know, if they can beat Washington at home, they're underdogs. If they can pull out a win, you know, without one of their best scorers in Brandon Williams, it would be huge for them moving forward. It'd be a huge confidence boost.
It'd be their
too.
Best win of the year.
I mean, absolutely.
Iowa State's rated a little bit higher than Washington, but they had a lot of key players out when Arizona beat them in Maui. So, the problem that Washington's having is that the Pac-12 is dragging everybody down because it did so poorly in the non-conference. So even though Washington's won 11 straight here, they're still not getting a lot of respect. You know, I think they're one of the top 25 teams in the nation. If you watch them play, they're pretty good. And but, you know, because of the Pac-12 is down, and maybe the geography hurts them a little bit being in the Northwest, I'm not sure how many people watch their games all the time. And, you know, I don't think the rest of the country is even aware that they're playing that well. Mm-hmm.
What's the best case scenario for Arizona looking ahead? Because they got Washington on Thursday. They got Wazoo on Saturday. I think they're going to take care of Wazoo. I mean, it may not be like a 20-point game, but it's going to be a game where Arizona's in control for the most part, I think. But, again, the Pac-12 is so wishy-washy. You just you simply don't know what to expect out of the conference.
Yeah, I remember they were losing to Cal in the first half at McGill. Yeah. So, I mean, you just don't know. Sorry, that was in Cal.
But after the Wazoo trip, or the hosting Washington State, they take on Utah and Colorado on the road. Games that, I mean, Arizona could very well win both of them, but those are also games that they could very well lose both
of
them.
Just like they were here. They went to overtime against Utah here. And Colorado, they beat them, but, you know, they've had a lot of trouble with Colorado and Boulder, and, you know, that's always a tough place to play.
Best case scenario, you have to split the Washington schools at home this week. You know, obviously a win over Washington would speak volumes for what this team's capable of moving forward. Utah-Colorado, I mean, again, it would be huge to sweep that, but realistically, you just want to split road trips at this point.
Yeah.
You know, that's the name of the game in the Pac-12. It's what coaches say at the beginning of every year, you know, split your road trips, take care of business at home. And that's really what Arizona has to do. They have to take care of business. Best case scenario, they split the road trip in the Rocky Mountains, you know, take care of business with Cal and Stanford at home, and see what you can do in Oregon. Again, if that's a split on the road, then it is what it is. And you got to beat ASU at home. So if they win the rest of their home games and split on the road, that's probably best case scenario in my mind.
21. They'd be at 21 wins, I think, then. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they could win a game or two in the Pac-12 tournament, they might have an argument even for an at-large, although that's... It's hard to make that argument with the Pac-12 being down this year. It's certainly a scary one to make, so you want to win that tournament. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, I think the important thing for Arizona in the last few weeks of Pac-12 play here is getting a bye in the Pac-12 tournament, and that would mean one less game. It's, you know, an easier round. I mean, it goes a long way. It sounds kind of silly, but there's a bit. I don't know if you guys trust this team to win four games in Vegas when everyone's making a dash for the tournament. Because it's not just Arizona right now. I mean, everybody in the Pac-12 is going to have to win. They're going to be desperate. And you don't want to play four games in Vegas. No,
I was just
going
to say that. That's really the whole key of the race right now is who gets the top four spots or who gets 2, 3, and 4. We know who's going to get one.
Yeah. So, right.
And particularly for Arizona, it's important because their depth, like we were talking about, is almost non-existent at this point. They cannot win four games. Mm-hmm. It would be almost impossible to see that happen unless Brandon Williams came back and everybody else was super healthy. And, you know, Colorado did win four games in 2012, and that was, you know, that was surprising, but the league was a little down, and Colorado, I believe, had some depth that year and got on a roll, but that's just not going to happen very often.
Fortunately for Arizona, I mean, we're already looking ahead to Las Vegas, but fortunately for Arizona, if they want to rely on home crowd and fans kind of behind them, I mean, we've seen this in the past. Las Vegas is usually kind of like McHale 2.0. But if Arizona is one of those bubble teams, do a lot of fans show up to Las Vegas?
Especially if they have to play on Wednesday, fans may not even be there on Wednesday. I mean, those Wednesday games typically aren't very well attended and doesn't really get going, it seems like, until Thursday. So. Mm-hmm.
The one thing they would have going is, is it spring break? Is the tournament over spring break still? So, you know, that's one thing they have going. Students might travel well regardless because they want to go to Vegas. But, even at home, I don't know. You guys are obviously at all the games. I mean, has attendance dipped a little bit at McHale?
Yeah.
I mean, they're probably...
It did for the non-conference. It was a couple thousand seats every night.
And I know Brucey wrote about it when they were in L.A. There were, not a lot of Arizona fans traveling to L.A., which is rare for them. I mean, they're always well-represented on the road, and even that's dipping now.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, one thing I noticed about Arizona in the attendance... U of A doesn't really have this superstar that everybody is like really looking forward to going and checking out. Dom, you remember this. 2013-14, Arizona had Aaron Gordon. Everybody wanted to go see Aaron Gordon before he left to go be a first-round pick and go play in the NBA. The next year, they had a Stanley Johnson on their team. Everybody wanted to go check out Stanley Johnson before he went and became a first-round pick in the NBA. There's no attractive box office player on this Arizona team, and that's why I think a lot of people aren't showing up.
Lauri Markkanen, DeAndre Ayton. I mean, there's always been one player, TJ McConnell, when he was here. I mean, Nick Johnson was a guy who always brought a spark to McHale. I mean, there's always someone to watch. And even without Brandon Williams now, I mean, this team has no firepower. They have to win ugly. They're not going to blow teams out, even if it is a Washington State or a Cal, you know, whoever it may be. They're going to have to find ways to win ugly, and it's not going to be fun to watch. They're not going to be convincing wins by any means, but at this point, you know, they're in the business of winning games because that's, you know, if you're not, you're, obviously you're always in the business of winning games, but they, I mean, they're at the end of the year here. They need them, and mm-hmm. they'll take them any way they can get them.
Mm-hmm. Let's focus on this upcoming game against Washington. Washington currently number one in the Pac-12. They're still undefeated in conference play. And Bruce, you wrote this story. Usually teams that are at this point of the season where they have that maybe two or three game cushion in the lead of the Pac-12, usually we are, can already determine that they're going to run away with it.
It's it's crazy. I mean, there's been three previous teams that have gone 9-0 and had three or more game leads like Washington has now, and they've all won the conference by five games. Like,
wow.
So, you know, going by that, you know, and actually if you look at Washington's schedule the rest of the way, outside of this weekend, if they get through this weekend, their schedule is the easiest in the conference. They could, I mean, if they win these two games, there's going to be people talking about them going 18-0, and it, you know, because they have that defense that makes them a little more consistent, it just might happen, but you know, it's going to be tough in a way. It's going to be tough for them to get both of these games too.
And Bruce, I know you've written about it a little bit. I know Greg's written about it a lot. I mean, the job Mike Hopkins has done at Washington is just phenomenal. I mean, they're off to one of their best starts ever, and it's his second year there. And, you know, they're doing things that not a lot of Pac-12 teams do. Granted, it's a down Pac-12 year, but, you know, the success that the Huskies are having right now is legitimate. It's real. It's not because it's just the Pac-12. Certainly that helps. But they're a talented team, and Bruce, you said they're a top 25 team. I absolutely agree with that. Mm-hmm. You know, they're one of few teams in the Pac-12 that can probably win a couple games in March.
Well, yeah, and I mean, and don't get me wrong, Hopkins has done a tremendous job. He turned basically a lot of those core players were on Lorenzo Romar's team 2 years ago, and they were horrible defensively. And that's not necessarily anybody's fault. They just didn't seem interested. There's something going on with that team, and he's turned them into with this aggressive zone they play. They're really into it, and I think the other factor is there's a little bit of luck there that he's, you know, he's got fourth year players playing huge roles. Matisse Thybulle, David Crist, these guys are Nolan Dickerson. These guys are around. Who stays that long in college anymore at that mm-hmm. level? It's pretty unusual mm-hmm. and. They're all there, and you just, and it's like 1965 or something in some ways when you look at a team like that.
What's the first time they're what, 9-0 now since like the 50s? 52, 53? 50,
yeah, exactly. 66 years or something, yeah.
That's insane. And I feel like Matisse Thybulle, you talk about...
Well, I mean, a lot of those years was UCLA and then Arizona, Stanford, you know, whatever.
But. I feel like Matisse Thybulle's been in Washington for 6 years now.
Oh, he's so good. Mm. He's so good. Well, Noah Dickerson too.
Yeah, they got a lot of guys that are blue collared, just gritty players mm-hmm. that know how to get the job done.
Yeah, even their young guys. I mean, their young guys look like they've been there for a while.
Yeah,
that's just the way they're playing basketball right now.
Mm-hmm. So, can we already chalk it up that Mike Hopkins is coach of the year for the Pac-12? Is it safe to say at this point, or is it too early?
Well, I mean, if Oregon State finished second, maybe you could make an argument okay. for Wayne Tinkle, only because Hopkins had so many guys coming back. So a lot of times Coach of the Year awards are ranked relatively to expectations to what you'd finished with, and if you made a huge jump over what you expected, you're going to win that award. And I think Oregon State was picked eighth or something like that.
Wow.
So that would be my
I think,
thought. But,
yeah.
but certainly Hopkins at the midway point, mm-hmm. it'd have to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Arizona Wildcats, they take on Washington on Thursday, tip-off set for 7 p.m. You can follow the Wildcaster on Twitter for all of your live in-game coverage. So since we have a few moments left here, guys, I want to talk about some NBA trade deadlines. Usually people have been talking about Anthony Davis and the possibility of him going to the Los Angeles Lakers, and people have even said that Solomon Hill could be packaged in to that deal, but there's one Wildcat that is officially on the move. And Bruce, I don't know if you've seen this, but ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski reported that Stanley Johnson is being traded to the Milwaukee Bucks in exchange for Thon Maker. So Thon Maker is going to the Detroit Pistons while Stanley Johnson is going to the Milwaukee Bucks. And while, I mean, Stanley Johnson, he's averaging 7 points per game off the bench for the Pistons. He's had a very mild start to his NBA career, would you say? Or was it what you expected it to be? I mean, a first-round pick, you thought he would have some significant role, at least in year four, right?
he just kind of, I mean, he is, going back to the theme of the podcast, I guess, he is what he is. I mean, he's not a super flashy guy. He's never going to be the best player on a playoff team or, you know, on any team for that matter, and he hasn't been so far. And, you know, he can score, but he doesn't do anything too exceptionally well. I mean,
he's a good wing defender.
He is a good defender. I'd say that's definitely his strength. But when you look at guys who are going to make a splash, they got to do it on offense. And Stanley Johnson isn't really that guy. Again, he's good on the wing. He can heat up from outside, but he's not good enough at any one thing to be that kind of difference maker in the NBA. Mm-hmm. I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it probably didn't help his development, and that he went into the league as a very young player. He was young for his grade, if I recall. And so, you know, then you're really putting a lot of trust. I thought that system would be good at developing him, but as Dom says, it may be a matter of, you know, sometimes you just, there are certain skills that you really need to pop out if you're going to make it in that, you know, at a high level. And, you know, having that singular skill that some guys have, and he seems like he's, you know, got a lot of things he's very good at, but maybe still lacking. But, you know, he's still, you know, even being fourth year in the league, he's still got some room to grow. Age-wise, he's still on the young side, I would think. You know,
yeah,
he still could be a lot better than he is now. I mean, mm-hmm. there's some more ceiling there.
Right, and the fact that he's so young, I mean, he has a lot of time to get better. So
he's only 22 years old.
Right. So, you know, he, yeah, I mean, he's got the next 10 years to you know, improve to it. Mold into a better NBA player, and he can do it. I mean, you know, we've seen guys do it before. Again, he's just not at the starting point that, say, Lauri Markkanen is in the NBA, mm-hmm. You know, who's lighting teams up and looks like an NBA player right now. I just don't think Stanley Johnson looks or has the making of a superstar in the NBA. Like I said, he'll never be the best player on his team, but he can be a role player. He can be a sixth man off the bench. I mean, you know, especially in Milwaukee. You've seen it before.
Yeah, well,
he might be better in that kind of
exactly.
system.
Exactly.
You know, playing a smaller role for a better team. Mm.
And he's playing for Milwaukee, which is like, okay, do you really want to live in Wisconsin? But believe it or not, the Bucks have a game and a half lead for first place in the Eastern Conference over the Toronto Raptors. So it's not like he's getting traded to another team that's probably going to be in the lottery once again. No, he's being traded to a team that's going to be competing for the Eastern Conference, and maybe you can even see them in the NBA Finals this year, because he's being traded to the Bucks, and he's going to be teamed up with Giannis Antetokounmpo, who I think personally is the best player in the Eastern Conference. And then Chris Middleton and Malcolm Brogdon. I mean, those are key players right there that you can, you know, build yourself around. And plus, they have Eric Bledsoe. They just have a nice core, and I think Stanley Johnson could provide a little something for them.
And it's perfect for him because, like we said, maybe that's the role he needs. You know, coming off the bench, being a role player who can fill in minutes instead of, you know, the Pistons. When's the last time the Pistons were good? You know, they probably relied on him a lot more than the Bucks are going to.
Yeah.
And that I think that'll benefit Stanley in the long run. At least it certainly can't hurt him, you know, from what he was doing in Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, I got to ask you this. I mentioned him earlier, Solomon Hill, mm-hmm. playing for the New Orleans Pelicans. Bruce, I don't know how much Solomon Hill you've watched in the NBA, but, I mean, we're talking about him still in the league at this point. Has he had a better NBA career than you anticipated?
No, I think he's made more money than I anticipated. I think he is playing kind of at the level I thought. I mean, he's a guy I thought would stick in the league, but, you know, wouldn't be a standout guy. But he had that great year or two with the Pacers, and then he got paid. And you know, unfortunately for him, sometimes that hasn't worked out on a great level for him in New Orleans. But you know, but he's still there. He's a good character guy, hard worker, you know, can do a lot of things well. I mean, he's going to be around. So, you know, I mean, there's nothing bad about that. He's making a good living.
They're role players. I mean, let's put it this way. If you're a role player in the NBA and you can carve out a 10-15-year career, I mean, Solomon's going to be playing well into his 30s. If Stanley Johnson can do that as a role player in the NBA, then you're okay. I mean, that's all you can do. I mean, that's all you can ask for. Again, he's never going to be a flashy superstar kind of guy. So if you can have an impact on a team, on several teams for 10-15 years to have an NBA career like that, I mean, not many guys do that.
Well, yeah, and I think he's actually kind of a recruiting tool for Sean Miller in the sense that here's a guy who stuck around 4 years and actually got better every year, a little bit every better, he added to his game. And he was playing out of position for a lot of his career and forced to develop some skills that he might not have. And, you know, he was a guy who came out of high school pretty highly rated and, you know, probably overrated when you look at it. And if he had, you know, a lot of guys now would come out with those kind of ratings, they think they should leave after a year or two, and then they go and they go to the G League and they you never hear from him again. That could have happened to him, but he stuck around. Got better, and you know, he's making a, you know, serviceable career. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
It's the perfect recruiting tool for guys like Brandon Randolph, Brandon Williams, probably Nico Mannion coming in next year, who aren't guys who are going to be NBA caliber players after 1 year. I mean, they're not going to be one and dones, and that's what Sean Miller's going to look to. And I mean, say exactly that. I mean, look at what these guys did, and if you stick around, and maybe not for 4 years, I don't see Brandon Williams being here for 4 years, but develop in college.
I don't know. Nico Mannion, I'm not saying he's going to be a one and done, but he's significantly gotten better throughout his last year. I mean, on senior night, he dropped 57 points.
He's impressive. He's impressive.
He might not be around long. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, and this has happened since Solomon Hill left, you know, the two-way contracts and the development of the G League and the whole, it's just, it's a lot easier for guys to leave. There's a lot more options for them to go and say, hey, I want to develop in the G League and get paid a little bit. Mm-hmm. Not a lot, but, you know, maybe if a kid doesn't want to go to school, you can go there, make 75 grand or whatever. Yeah. And that's not a bad option either. So, you know, some of these guys we're talking about, it's possible, even if they're not quite ready for the NBA, they might do that, and they might choose to do that instead of be here, you know, and that's, you know, that's an ongoing battle for Sean Miller and every college coach, really.
And look at Stanley Johnson, too, though. I mean, where do you want to develop, in college or the NBA? And granted, if you're an 18-, 19-year-old kid and you're getting millions of dollars flashing your face, you're going to want to go develop in the NBA.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
But certainly that's, you know, that's a college coach's struggle, is trying to not convince these kids, but lay it out for them and go, you know, this is what you're going to get if you stay here for an extra year. And if you go to the NBA, maybe you're not going to step into the limelight like you want to right away, but you're gonna have to work your way there. And again, that's a lot easier to do when you're getting paid.
Real quick, guys, Arizona against Washington State this week. What's your score predictions? How much do you think Arizona's gonna win by? How much they could lose by? Bruce, we'll start with you. Quick prediction for this weekend.
Well, you got to go with Washington on Thursday, just, you know, because, again, even in a road environment, it's going to be very tough. I think, you know, it'll be a good atmosphere out there, but their defense just keeps them in games and causes trouble. And granted, Arizona's been, you know, somewhat good against zone defenses at times this season. But as Miller said yesterday, once you get the ball in there and you penetrate, you've still got to make good decisions. Sometimes they've had trouble with that, and they've been hit and miss. So anyway, I don't know. I would say, you know, Washington by 8, and then maybe Arizona turns around and wins on Saturday by around 8.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll both be close. I said it earlier, I don't see the Washington State game being a blowout. I look back at Cal earlier this year when it was close, and then Arizona pulled away. It might be something like that.
Well, talking about possible NBA players, Robert Franks, he might be one of the best NBA prospects in the league right now. So if nothing else, Washington State has him.
Right. No. So I mean, I don't see that being a blowout. But they'll both be competitive. You know, if Arizona can stick with Washington, if Arizona plays well as they did up in Tempe, then the Washington game should be close at the end. Mm-hmm. But you got to like Washington and then Arizona against the Cougars.
I'm the same way. I got Washington. I think with Brandon Williams being out and Washington having those guards, those long, lengthy guards, like a guy like Matisse Thybulle, I think Brandon Randolph's going to have a lot of trouble scoring the ball. A lot of Arizona's guards are going to have trouble scoring the ball.
And with
Brandon Williams out, I don't see Arizona having a solid night, at least from the guards against Washington.
Well, the other thing about Washington, too, is they're actually a lot better offensively as well. They're leading the league in three-point shooting. Crisp and Jalen Noel are both shooting over 50% in league play. And you know, and that may not translate to McHale, but they've got some weapons offensively, too.
Lean on Justin Coleman. Lean on Justin Coleman.
A sentence I never thought I'd ever hear. Lean on Justin Coleman for a game against Washington.
You got to use him in the offense.
Brandon Williams being out, I think that's a big blow for Arizona. So I got Washington actually by 11, and then I'm going to have the Wildcats winning against Washington State by 5. Robert Franks, I think, is going to have a good game.
Huh?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a close game. I think Ernie Kent, my guy. he's had experience coaching in McHale Center. He knows how to kind of weather that environment. I think Washington State, they'll keep it close against Arizona. And that's just because Brandon Williams is going to be out for that game. All right, well, that would do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Special thanks to the good folks at Frog and Firkin for always hosting us. You can download this podcast on the Wildcaster app, which is available on the App Store and Google Play. You can subscribe to the Wildcast on Apple Podcasts. And as always, follow us on Twitter and give us a like on Facebook. For Bruce, for Dom, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
Smoke Shop. Save up to 40% on all products with no city or state sales tax. Over 100 brands, including a walk-in humidor. Visit Chico's inside or take advantage of the drive-thru. Open 7 days a week. You'll save up to 40% every day at Chico's Smoke Shop.